Succession number 28413, Reel 1.
Mr. Sowler, Reel 1. Where were you born, Mr. Sowler?
I was born in Norton, the Mount. It's on Brown Jug Bank, leading into Norton itself.
And what's your date of birth?
19th of August, 1923.
Well, what did your father do for a living?
My father was a gas fitter. He had originally tried to join the army in 1918, but he was too young and then sent him home.
Did you have any brothers and sisters?
No, just the only one. My mother, I think, had an operation when I was young, and that was the end of any family. My mother actually had been in South Africa for about 8 years. I found, to my amazement, that my grandfather had been born in America. That's my maternal grandfather.
Can you describe the area you lived in?
Well, we were only in Norton for a very short time. It was in rooms, apparently. Obviously, the landlady didn't like screaming children. We then moved to some further rooms. Of course, this was just after the First World War, when housing was very difficult. And we moved to Mrs. Fowler. Her husband had worked at Blair's shipyard, Blair's engine works, but he died. And as a widow with a daughter, she was glad to have somebody. We stayed with her not for a great length of time, and then we moved to Newtown in Stockton.
And this was a house of your own there, was it?
Well, it was rented.
So you were in a rented house?
Yes.
What kind of wage did your father bring in? Did you remember?
Yes, I mean, he had one advantage working for the gas works. He had regular employment. The wage was pretty poor. It was somewhere about £2.10. If that, because I know a farthing an hour rise was greeted with great glee. And even at the beginning of the war, he was barely reaching over £3.
So would you say that it was a tough upbringing because of lack of money?
Money was always short, but I had a mother who was a very good manager and who never ever got into debt. That was the last thing she would ever do.
And did she work?
No. No, there was always somebody at home whenever I arrived there.
The house itself, when you finally got settled in a home of your own, can you describe it?
Yes, it was part of a small street called Ezard Street, and it was on a triangular piece of ground. So the first two houses in the street had some peculiar shaped rooms, ours being one of them. It was two-bedroomed, terraced, of course, in those days, and Newtown itself was a triangular piece of land between the Durham Road and the Bishopton Road, about 150 houses and shops.
And what were your neighbours like?
Very quiet, very good. No trouble. Next door had a son called Bradley Kane. I had the misfortune of being the youngest in the area, and so consequently, even at five and six, a year difference was quite you were quite young compared to the rest. There were not many children, really. You could count them on your hand, practically.
And from the point of view of food, were you well fed as a child? Were there no problems there?
No problems at all, no. The thing is, life was very, very stable. That was the main point about it. I started school at five, of course, as it was in those days. And, of course, the difference from nowadays was that I was taken down to school the first day. That was the last time. After that, I walked down to school, which was about a quarter of a mile away. I walked back at lunchtime, back down again, back home again. Never any problems, always on your own.
Did your father have a garden or an allotment?
No, unfortunately. Not at that time, not till we moved in 1937 to a house with a garden.
So your mother as the manager would have a pretty difficult time in a way to feed you and clothe you within such a small wage.
Well, it did become rather difficult because by the time I went to the grammar school, which I got a free place there, and it was always a bit of a problem. Such things are not a lot of expenditure, but, you know, you had to put in, I think, 3 shillings for the sports fund, you know, a year that was, and caps, you know, odds and ends like that. So that when finally I'd taken my school certificate, as it was in those days, and I was going on to the higher school certificate, I realised it. I was being rather a drain on the family. Just the thought of a new prefect's cap at 7 and 6 months, you know, was a disaster sort of thing. I left school.
Before we come to that, did you have, was it essentially a free grant situation for the grammar school in those days, for the poorer children?
No, it was a scholarship.
A scholarship then.
Yes, there were 8 places that were free, and the other 20 or so were paid.
And you got one of the free ones?
I got one of the free ones. Had no trouble at school.
Clothing-wise, again, was it a question of patching and mending? Or
No, it was always well turned out.
So your parents worked pretty hard to see you were all right?
Yes.
How important was the church to the family, or the chapel?
We went to the church until I was about 14. I was actually in the choir, which will come up later. But somehow after that I drifted away from it. I don't know why. Well, one thing, my voice broke.
Did your parents go to church?
My father did. My father had originally, as a boy, sung in the same choir. But gradually, as I say, the whole family tended to drift away.
And within the community itself, did the church play a part?
No, I wouldn't say they did, no.
Was it a working class community?
Yes. But what you would call a stable working class, rather than... it was quite a good district, although it was working class.
Where was the main... what was the main area of employment for people living around you?
Well, the main area, I think, would be... There was steelworks. There were shops, of course. I don't think there's anything in particular, you know, that drew everyone into it. And sort of if it collapsed, it was a disaster. It was just that in the 30s, of course, everywhere collapsed, so it was one big disaster. ICI at Billingham took up quite a lot of people, of course.
Illnesses within the family, how were they met? For example, there was no National Health Service, of course.
Well, as far as the illness was concerned, our doctor was Dr. Merson. I think he paid a shilling sort of thing, whether it was a shilling a week or a shilling, I don't know. No problems. Never seemed to be any problem. Life sort of went on very easily as regards doctors. Mind, I was the biggest problem. I was knocked over accidentally by 2 boys running and one turned round and bumped into me. And I got a compound fracture of this arm. I fell out of bed and got a broken collarbone, which didn't help. That was all at the age of 8. Didn't affect my schooling, though. I still went to school with my arm in a sling. I was always top of the class for some reason or other.
What was the name of the first school you went to?
Newtown Council School.
And was that from what age?
That was from 5 to 11. Then I used to have the scholarship, of course.
Any memories of that school? The primary school?
Quite a lot, actually, because the infants were on the Durham Road side. And one of the things to watch when you were having playtime, the funerals used to go up to Durham Road church, the cemetery. You would get the cabs, of course it was all horses in those days, and at the back of the cabs would come a line of people following them in twos, walking, you see, because everything was so slow. And we also noticed, of course, even in those days you couldn't help but notice, as the hearse went past, everyone took their hats off. In the winter, of course it was all gas lit, the caretaker used to come round with a long pole to put the lights on. It was pretty cold in the winter as well, even though there was heating. Sometimes it was as low as 40 when you started on a winter morning. Carried on in through to the juniors. Juniors were 7 to 11. The school was in three blocks, girls in the middle. It was segregated, of course, after the infants. Never had any trouble in the juniors. Bit of bullying, not a lot. I could cope with it. I was the second fastest runner in the school, so the thing is, I rarely ever was caught.
Any teachers that stand out in your memory from your primary school days?
Yes. In the juniors, there was Benny Ward, who was the headmaster. There was Tosher Oliver. Why he was called Tosher, we never knew. He came from Thornaby on his bike. There was a Miss Wanford. And she had a trainee teacher with her the first year, which everybody called Pansy Irvin. Second year, we wondered how he'd learned so much in the first year, because we had it. He kept us well under control. In the infants, there was a Miss Burrows. She was about 6 foot tall, which, to our size at that age, she seemed enormous. We didn't like her. But in general, I enjoyed my school days. I never had any problem. I was always quite happy to go, quite happy to come back.
What was the discipline?
Good. There were 60 in the, believe it or not, in the so-called scholarship class. Discipline was kept very easily. If somebody did something and they owned up, they got caned. If no one would own up, they caned the whole class. I got quite a few wallops in that way for things that I'd never done. The odd things I did do, like eating in class, a dreadful thing, got the wallop for that. But nobody complained. It hurt.
Did your parents complain if you said you'd been caned?
No, no. Serve you right. No, I think in general, went to the grammar school.
Which grammar school was this?
Stockton. I went to the grammar school. It was a choice, you see. You took both certificates, grammar school and the secondary school. Most of the people I didn't like had gone to the secondary school, so it automatically meant I went to the grammar school. And the discipline there was very, well, I wouldn't say it was strict. I mean, but nobody stepped out of line. It was more self-discipline. I enjoyed that. No problems at all. It was a Thos Ridley who was headmaster, and he made sure. Amongst the crimes that you could commit was being outside of school without a cap, talking to girls on a street corner, all sorts of minor things that would be nowadays you didn't do. I don't think anybody resented it. Everybody was quite happy. No problems.
What was your favourite subject?
Never had any, strangely enough, which is what I found as one of the disadvantages.
Did you move to the sixth form? I think you said you took the school certificate.
I was going to move to the sixth form. Well, I did move there, but the war had started, and there was just nothing to do. You were left here.
But you had took the school certificate, I think you said.
Oh, yes.
The first examination of those days.
Eight subjects.
Yeah. Eight subjects.
Yes. No trouble.
So you're a bright chap.
I wouldn't say that. I just sort of plodded along and it just seemed to work. And you know, it just seemed to be like that. I must admit, in the last year, I was just getting a bit tired of school. I'd been top of the class all the way through the school, and I felt that the harder you worked, the less. My report didn't sound at all marvellous when you read it. So that old lot. I had two interests. Railways was the main one. Well, engines. And cycling was the other.
So can we go back then to somewhat early days and say to your childhood days, your younger childhood days, and what kind of leisure activities did a small child have in the area you were living in?
Well, I started on the Carno at a very early age. I had a Hornby train, but the trouble is there was never any room on the floor to put it down. Farmyard animals, little. Well, now what they would be actually frowned on, because they were metal. I don't know what sort of metal. Soldiers, toy soldiers.
A lot of them were lead, weren't they?
Lead, lead. Would, yes. And the heads used to fall off, so you used to use a matchstock to put the heads back on.
Outdoor activities.
Outdoor, well, I used to walk a lot. You see, I had this interest in railways, and somebody said, Newport loco sheds, a lot of the engines stand outside, and it's just across the river. So Sunday morning, I'd go down the riverside at Stockton was that time being demolished, and you had to find the right place, Hunter's Lane. You walked across the Malleable Wharf, followed the river, I couldn't swim, and sure enough, after you've walked about 3 miles, you came across the shed at the other side. There were all the engines stood outside. You could see the numbers, they were quite big. And at the same time, there was a ship anchored in the river called the Vale of Pickering. Must have been there a while because there were little plants growing out of the deck. Used to get to the Newport Lift Bridge, climb over the gate there, which was always locked, and then walk back to Stockton. About 9 miles, and I'd only be 12 at the most.
And was this the age that this interest in, this lifelong interest in trains started?
Oh yes, it started when I was about 10, yes.
Mainly what fired it? What set it going?
Two things I've always thought. One is, of course, I went to school with the station master's son, which was a big help. And the second thing is, it cost nothing. Trains ran all the time. You could sit on a fence and watch them, and it cost you nothing. And I think that has a lot to do with some people's interests, because there was no money anyway. You could tell the value of money. Occasionally, I would go on the station, penny platform ticket, and the station master would give me my penny back, and that was marvellous, a penny. I mean, nowadays, you know, people don't seem to know the value of it. You walked everywhere, you never took a bus, never even thought of taking a bus. Used to walk to even places like Eaglescliff, that would be 6-7 miles, you know. Used to, on a Sunday, we'd walk after church up to the Mile House, so-called, because it's about a mile, and back down a woodland path, now gone, no doubt. Just, it cost very little, that's the main thing.
And trains have become part of your life in a way, haven't they?
Yes, yes, they had, because, as I say, you could see them any time. And at that time, of course, not like the present day when people go around miles, it cost nothing. You're quite happy to sit on the fence and see them go backwards and forwards. It gradually developed, so I got to know more and more. But in those days, everything you had to find out for yourself. There were no books, anything like there is now. If you wanted to find out what the engine was, you had to look for its works plate if you could get near enough to it, told you where it was built. And you had a little notebook, tuppence from Woolworths. And you could write everything down in there. Money was the guiding light in those days, I'm afraid.
You said your other interest was cycling.
Yes. I did a fair amount of cycling. I started, I suppose, when I was about 12. I went to Shildon from Stockton. No maps, of course. You just followed your nose and the signposts. Got to Shildon, found the engine shed, and all the electric engines were in that had worked between Newport and Shildon. That was, I suppose, 15 miles. At the age of 12, I joined Stockton Wheelers, and I could quite happily do 110 miles, you know, without any trouble. And it gradually increased, so that by the time I was about 15, I could quite happily go up to my relations in Scotland. It was about 125 miles. We even rode across to Ullswater, 150 miles there and back, no problem.
And these were the heavy bikes of the day, were they not?
Well, they were fairly light for the day. Mm. Now, yes, now they'd be considered, I suppose, really heavy. But we never thought about it. always rode a fixed wheel with a very low gear. So uphill or downhill, it made no difference. And finally, I think the last thing I ever did before the war started, with three friends, we rode to Gatehouse of Fleet in southwest Scotland, which was 160 miles. And that, when you think of it in present day, we came back, and by the time we got to on the A66 to Stainmore, it was dark, it was foggy. And of course we had camping gear on with blankets, tents and so on. And so we had to push the bikes up the hills. And from it getting dark until arriving finally in Barnard Castle, we never saw a vehicle. I was worried at one time there might have been a Glasgow-London bus come over there at that time of night, but all that time, you imagine the A66 now, not a soul. Never saw. The first person we saw was the policeman on beat duty in Bishop Auckland, in Barnard Castle, about 3 a.m. in the morning, where he stopped to have a chat with us. But I enjoyed it. Then, of course, the war came.
Remembering the years immediately prior to the outbreak of the war, were you aware that things were becoming desperate, dangerous?
Well, I think my war started in October 1938. They came round the school and they asked senior boys if they would like to volunteer for the ARP as messengers, and I was one that did. We went back after school to first aid classes, gas drill, all sorts of things like that. And things looked very dodgy at that time. But
so ARP had started quite earlier than well, the year before 1939.
Yes.
So the government must have been aware that things might happen.
Well, they were digging trenches in the parks, if I remember rightly. In some of the London ones.
How old were you at that age? That's that point.
38. I'd be 15. Yes. So I did a lot of cycling anyway when I was 15.
And who was training you? You say you trained for first aid and gas and so forth. Who was doing the training?
It was I don't know what they called him. He was a stoutish chap who used to come regularly to the school.
Oh, was done at school?
Yes.
And was there any form of uniform or...?
No, nothing. No, we just did all these things. As far as I remember, the woodwork room was turned into a gas place that you had to run through to test what it was like. It was very mild, of course.
Now, how was that done?
I don't know, I think they must have let off a very small amount of gas, just so you could see what it was like. And, as I say, then, of course, it all seemed to vanish. 1939 came, nothing seemed to be happening.
Had you been issued with a gas mask at this point in time?
No.
When you were doing the training?
No. You were shown them and that.
Sorry?
You were shown the gas mask and so on, but you weren't issued with anything. I think everybody hoped it would go away, which everyone thought it had, of course.
And do you recall where you were and what you were doing at that moment when Chamberlain made the announcement?
I was sat at home, Sunday morning. We heard the sirens go, a false alarm, and they stopped. And people were putting brown paper strips across the window to stop them glass flying if there was a bomb. My mother said, "I'm not putting any of that stuff, it'll mark the window when I take it off." That was my war starting. And of course everywhere was blacked out in rapid time. I never blacked the bedroom I was sleeping in, because I used to put all my clothes in a certain order and I could jump into them at a moment's notice, because at that time they were calling us out on the ARP on a yellow warning, which was quite often, and nothing happened.
What was a yellow warning?
It's just a preliminary, a might be sort of thing.
Yeah.
It was not till they started getting reds that we were called out then.
What was the public's perception of the war? Did they think it was going to be like the First World War?
I don't know, really. To be perfectly honest, I never gave it a thought.
And your parents, were they worried about the fact that it may go on long enough for you to be involved?
I remember my father and one of my uncles saying, I'll never have our sons in the war, we'll go ourselves instead. But I wasn't bothered, to be quite honest. See, the war came, I'd applied for a job at ICI in the labs. I applied just a few days before war started. The war started and I got a letter back saying, we're very sorry, but we're not taking anybody on. We've shut all the research labs due to the war starting. They were never reopened till December. So, as I say, I went into the sixth form. There was nothing to do. And I heard of a job going at Ed Wrightson's, the engineering firm, as an apprentice fitter and turner. So I applied for that. I got that. That was quite a hoot.
What kind of work was it that you were doing?
Well, I can give you a very apt description. I started there, and there was with another lad who was a bit older than me, who was going to show me. And we were on a lathe with about nearly a 3-foot headstock. It was a big lathe. There was no tailstock. And you had to go down to the platers where they were cutting out analyst rings for mines. It was the ring that the two parts of the mine were welded to. And it weighed about 40 pounds. You had to carry that back from the plater shop, set it up in the lathe. You had to turn it over the top to a specific distance. Then you had to turn down both sides of the analyst ring at the same time to a certain agreed thing. And I was given a week to learn that. After a week, I was on my own. After a further week, I was on shifts. Of course, being only 16 then, I could only work 6 till 2, 2 till 10. After a further week, I was on piecework. For a normal week's work, I got 14 and tuppence, which would be what, 73p now? No, it wouldn't be that, 71. And when I was on piecework, I got 6 7/8 of a penny for each one of these things I turned up. I didn't like it. I got fed up with it.
How many could you turn up in an average week?
It took quite a while. I really don't know. I know that when I went into piecework, I could make very little more on piecework than if I was actually on normal working. So that means, say, 14 shillings. Well, 14 tuppence a week would be 170 pence, and probably about 20, that's all. It was a slow job.
Was it precise, very precise?
Yes, very. If they weren't up to scratch, dead, the thing, the gauges didn't fit, that was hard luck, scrap.
And you wouldn't get paid for that, presumably?
No. Oh, no.
What were the hours again that you worked?
6 till 2, 2 till 10. No breaks. You worked.
So you didn't have no tea breaks?
No,
that nature?
No, nothing of that sort.
What about workers' playtime and that kind of thing that came
None.
In?
None whatsoever. No.
What other type of work was Ed Wrightson turning out at that time?
Well, before the war even, there was a place called the Bomb Shop. It had been an old cotton mill, I think. It was on one of the top floors. There was, in the main machine shop, somebody was turning up a tail shaft for a ship. He only put one cut on a shift, and it took that long to go the full, it was a terrific length of the lathe. And they were doing all sorts of jobs like that.
Basically, sea jobs, marine jobs, are they?
No, anything. I said, main bombs. It was heavy engineering, that's what it amounted to.